All right. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the last day of TechEd. My name is Fabian. I'm a program manager with the Windows Server team. And it's an incredible pleasure for me to be here today to talk to you a little bit about work folders. This is the deep dive session. Yesterday, we had another one from my dear colleague, Jian Yan, about deploying and managing work folders. So we released work folders about a year ago, or a couple of months ago at least. Maybe by a show of hands, who of you have some familiarity with work folders? Know what it's there for? Seen it before? Okay. Well, it's about a third of the audience. So for the benefit of those that do know a little bit about work folders, I'll go and do the introduction relatively short, but I will get the rest of you caught up to a place where we can all make use of the advanced or a little bit deeper information that I'm going to give to you today. All right. Before we get started, one more point. I would like to channel the questions towards the end of the session, because I have a very full session with a lot of content, a lot of demos, and we have a block at the end that's reserved for questions. We also have some colleagues here that can address your detailed questions, and I think that's just a more efficient use of your time. And when we end the session, we will stick around for a couple more minutes. If you have to run to the next session, just come by, tell us when you want to meet, and we can make sure we address your questions sometime later today. All right. Let's get started by maybe talking a little bit about the file server in general. File servers have been around for decades. They are, in fact, the original server workload. And over all these years, file servers are still very relevant in today's world. Today, we see exabytes of new storage being deployed every year just to support information workers' files on file servers. And Microsoft file servers have been around for almost the same amount of time, and their feature set has always been created with a sense of simplicity and efficiency. And work folders would like to carry on that tradition and leverage all the existing file server features, as well as integrating in the right management places, which is Server Manager, the new Server Manager that you all know since Server 2012. And over all these years that Windows file servers have been around, a very rich ecosystem has formed around them that allows you to further enrich the file server with capabilities and functionalities that you need to tailor to your exact organization's needs. And we want to make sure that file server is a very comfortable place to leverage your existing investments in file servers and further propel you to the 21st century. All right. But now it's 2014. And over the last couple of years, especially with the advent of bring your own devices, BYOD, expectations around file access have changed. And this guy is actually your worst nightmare. He'll go to extremes to get to the data that he wants to get to in order to get his job done from the devices that he chooses to use. He also happens to be the CEO of the company. Would you like to tell him that he's violating corporate data policies? Do you think he'll listen to you? Or is he just going to do what he needs to do to get his job done? Well, you really have three options. You can ignore it. Pretend BYOD is not happening. You can forbid it, write down a policy, and watch him and others work around you. Or you can embrace it and empower your employees to get to the data that they need to get their jobs done from the devices and locations that they choose. That's why we introduced work folders a few months back. And as it is with V1 features, there are some things that they do, some things that they don't do yet. And with this first release of work folders, we're very much focused on a user's individual work data. I want to be clear here, it's very distinct from collaboration scenarios, team shares, group shares, these kinds of things. In work folders, in V1, we're focusing on a user's individual data. Think of their home directory. We allow that data to be worked on the individual devices. The user thinks about nothing else but local files on this local device. And in the background, we asynchronously synchronize that file or those files with the file server. And that allows you to centralize that data. And centralization is important to you because you can protect the data. You can restore it if necessary. You can encrypt it if appropriate. And last but not least, you can make sure that you have a copy of that data, so that if the employee and the organization part ways, the last copy of a very important set of data isn't going to leave the organization just because the employee does. Our vision is that with WorkFolders, we're going to enable the user to use any device that they choose. With the release of Windows 8.1, we made sure that the WorkFolders client is built in. Configure and go, nothing you have to do. But we also acknowledge that most of you have probably deployed Windows 7 in your organizations. And for those of you that have, about 2 weeks ago, we released a client that addresses Windows 7 devices. And we also know that you're being asked to support iPads. And although there is nothing new around iPads that I can talk to you about today, I can say that we're working on it. It's going to be great. And other form factors, such as phones, other operating systems, such as Android, they're certainly within our vision, but we've got to take one step at a time. Access from anywhere really means access from anywhere. No VPN required, like was with offline files and photo redirection. And last but not least, we're doing all of this for you and for the user, so all of us can remain in compliance with our organization's data governance policies. All right. You're probably thinking, doesn't Microsoft have a few file sync solutions already? How does WorkFolders fit in there? Well, we will continue to have OneDrive, very focused on a consumer scenario, where you will be able to synchronize your personal files. It has nothing to do with your corporate files. We also offer OneDrive for business. If what you're looking for is a very rich collaboration scenario or a solution for collaboration scenarios, then OneDrive for business is all you need to know for file sync. No matter whether you have a SharePoint deployed on-prem or as part of Office 365, you'll be able to leverage file sync there. But we know that there are many organizations out there that have made a choice to remain using file servers for all the right reasons: cost, efficiency, already made investments in file servers. So for all of us that are sticking with file servers, we're introducing WorkFolders so that you can go and synchronize or allow access to data that sits on file servers instead of SharePoints. And last but not least, we have offline files and photo redirection. And my personal opinion is that you can look at WorkFolders as the next step in that journey, because it allows you to address some of the BYOD scenarios that are very hard to address with offline files and photo redirection. All right. In the beginning, I said that WorkFolders is centered around simplicity. So simplicity goes both ways. It's important for the IT admin, for you, in order to set it up. But it's even more important for the user who needs to configure it sometimes, especially on their personal devices where you can't configure it for them. And you need to make sure that the users are actually able to do it. So I'll switch to my demo machine real quick. So what we have here is, let's think about Joe. Joe works for the finance department in Contoso. He has his Office PC. He is happily using WorkFolders on his Office PC. These are all his Office file, his work files. I should just remove that one. It's all his Office files. And Joe has also a Surface. Maybe you send him an email that says, you can now use WorkFolders on your personal devices. Or maybe Joe is tech savvy enough to just go and be curious about it and see if he can actually enable WorkFolders on a personal device. So I'll just hit start, type WorkFolders, and I find the configuration for it. So again, it's built in Windows 8.1. So on all the Surface devices that have the 8.1 update, it's looking exactly the same way after you patched your Windows 7 clients. The user can simply go and set up WorkFolders, and what we're asking for here is an email address. I'll explain more why we would like to know the email address. In this case, Joe just types his email address, joe@contoso.com. And what happens in the background is we're now trying to find the workflow to server that you have deployed on-prem in your organization. And after we've found the server, we're going to be prompted for credentials because this isn't a domain joined device. We don't know the user. The user needs to make sure, or we need to make sure the user has permissions to come in and sync. In our case, we're using Digest, so I have to provide the domain and the username and, of course, the password. Joe@contoso.com. Well, then I probably mistyped something. All right, there we go. So that was everything we needed to do to find the workflow server, and everything was done for the user in the background. I'll tell you a little bit later about how this is actually accomplished and what you would need to do is a very small thing that you would need to do to enable this scenario. As a next step, the user can now choose to, can now choose where the work folder's files should be stored. If he has two volumes, he can choose a different volume. In this case, I'll just stick with the default. And this page here is very interesting for you as the IT admin. For Joe, it basically just means, oh, if I'm bringing corporate data on my personal device, I understand that there will be some rules that my IT department would like to enforce on my device to make sure that data is secure. And I think that's very important to you as you allow personal devices into the corporate environment. So all Joe needs to do is accept those changes and set up work folders. As we do that, we can now see that the work folders folder is open for him automatically. And we can now see that the files are trickling in, synchronization is going on, and after sync is finished, just a couple of seconds here, we can see that this is now the exact same set as we see over here. We can go and let's go here and say, create a new document. Hello. And just a few seconds later, we will see that document popping up on this side. There we go. We can open it. We can write something else. Save it and close it. And we see that the document on my Surface PC that is not domain joined has 1 kilobyte in size. And we see that the original document hasn't synchronized with the server yet, has a size of 0 kilobytes. And we can speed this up by simply hitting sync now. Or we can just wait for a couple of seconds, and now the document has actually synchronized to my other PCs. All right, let's go back and look at what we've just seen. What we've just seen was a very simple deployment that a user needs to do if you can't help him provision his machine. We used nothing but an email address. But what do we actually need to know on a client about a server if we want to establish a connection? Answer is pretty simple. We need to know the URL of the server. So how do we get that URL? By using the email address, we're actually constructing the URL for the user in the background. We go to a well-known URL called workfolders. And then whatever the user entered is part of the email address. This has nothing to do with Exchange. This has nothing to do with the actual user or email account. We're simply asking for an email address because the user knows it. If we ask the user for a domain, he may or may not know that, but he knows his email address. So that is a part that we call auto-discovery. And we hope that you can all make use of auto-discovery, and I'll tell you in a little bit what it takes to make that work. What you've seen in this demo was an approach to manual deployment. And with manual deployment, we mean the user goes through any step that is required to set up work folders. There's an additional option that I didn't show you, which is if you can't make auto-discovery through email work, you could also hand out explicit URLs to, or maybe different URLs, to different sets of users. And the users can go and plug in the URL and set up work folders that way. There's another option. We call it opt-in. It's hopefully the mode, or it's probably the mode, that most of you would like to operate in for those devices that you have management control over. So what you can do is you can use System Center, Intune, whatever mobile device management utility you have, to push down the configuration, namely the URL, to the client, and have the user simply turn it on. Decide, I want to use work folders on this device. There's nothing else he needs to provide. And as he does that, we can make sure that only the devices that he actually wants to use for sync are enabled for sync. Because remember back to offline files or photo redirection, if you're going down to a lab, you're logging into a server, or you're logging into somebody else's machine, and photo redirection policies apply, you're automatically getting a cache of your files onto your device. And we got feedback that a lot of people did not like that. So with work folders and the opt-in option, you're enabling people to set them up, configure them, but let them decide which device they actually like to use work folders on. There's a third option that we call mandatory, because for some of you, the mandatory approach will solve the explicit problem in your organization that you have. Mandatory means nothing else but opt-in plus a little check mark that says, don't just configure work folders, also turn it on for the user. But if you do that, then you need to be aware that you're running into the same problem. User logs in and automatically starts syncing their files to this machine. So opt-in might be a better choice. Yesterday in Jane's session, we learned about deployment and two modes or two sync modes that any user will go through. I'll just recap real quick. There is ongoing sync, where the user just makes little changes and they sync up and down with the server. And there is initial sync. So initial sync is very resource heavy. It could saturate your network for a large amount of users. So if you use mandatory for all the users in your organization, and you turn that on Monday morning, every user comes, 8 a.m., logs in, for, group policy applies, and everybody starts syncing their entire data set, either up or down the server, and very quickly you will see that you can saturate your network. So you need to be very careful when you choose mandatory for how many users you want to roll this out, how much network capacity you have. So go back, watch change session. There is some very interesting information in there that help you plan for that. All right. So we talked about clients. Let's step back for a second and look at the overall components that we have to work with when we look at work folders. First, we have work folders as a file and storage services subrole. So on any server 2012 R2 where you can turn on file and storage services, you can turn on the work folder subrole. What that does is it enables Server Manager to go and give you a comprehensive look of all the sync activity that you have in your organization. You will also turn on the sync protocol. This is an alternative access protocol, just like SMB and NFS. If you, just like NFS and SMB, if you are trying to access the server, you can use different routes, SMB, NFS, or now sync. It's its own new protocol. Every work folder server will have at least one or more sync shares. And a sync share is, again, very similar to SMB and NFS, just a pointer or a share to a physical location on the file server. And you will assign rights for users to come in through that sync share and actually accessing the file share, or actually accessing the file location or the folder location on the actual server. And as you do that, NTFS permissions take over inside the folder for more granular access control, just the same way SMB and NFS does it today. What we would like to ask you, what is the best practice, is that you have dedicated security groups for, or a dedicated security group for a sync share, so that you can decide which user can come in for sync. A question that we've gotten before was, what if I have two sync shares and two dedicated security groups, and I misconfigure and have a user in both of these security groups? Well, we don't recommend you doing that, but if it happens, we will handle it, and we will pick a sync share for the user that the user will then go and consistently use with all his devices and sync against until such time as he loses permission to that sync share. And we're gonna talk a bit about more about that when we talk about migrations. It becomes useful. And last but not least, we have the user devices. They come in if they have a local change detected on their device. They come in and send that change to the server. If they didn't have a change, occasionally they come in, check with the server, do you have anything new? Then the server sends them the updates, always in this hub and spoke architecture, never from device to device directly. All right. Let's look at a single server deployment. Yesterday in Jane's session, we've seen much more complicated versions of this diagram in all their different shapes. And I recommend you going back and looking at this to just see what other options there are. But I'm picking this one just so that we can see the individual pieces or the environment WorkFolders will work in. In the middle, we have our file server. It has the WorkFolders role turned on, so it's effectively the WorkFolders server. On the left-hand side, we have all the user devices that are outside the corporate network. On the right-hand side, we have some more devices inside the network. Outside the network, the devices come in, sync through a reverse proxy. Inside, they go directly to the file server, or you can alternatively route them to also go through the reverse proxy. We're going to cover in a little bit later why you might want to do that. We don't require the client devices to be domain joined, except for Windows 7. We're making some promises around data security that if you allow that data to be synced to a device, and only if Windows 7 is domain joined, we can uphold that promise. So that's a limitation of the Windows 7 client. The WorkFolders server, however, we require to be domain joined. That's mostly because of the authentication schemes that you can enable. It's Kerberos for those internal devices, Digest for those outside the network, and optionally, you can enable ADFS if you want to do multi-forest deployments through a reverse proxy, or if you want to enable multi-factor authentication, even seamless multi-factor authentication. And last but not least, if you want to enable sync access for only those devices that are registered, that's the workplace join scenario. So if you allow only registered devices in, then you know you have at least a limited functionality or limited management capability of those devices. And that means if you enforce encryption through the sync share, if you enforce encryption of that data on the actual device, then you can use your mobile device management solution to selectively wipe just the encryption key off the device. And that effectively destroys access to all the corporate data without affecting any of the personal data. Because if users bring in their personal devices and you wipe their entire device, they're gonna be pretty mad. So we don't want that. Additionally, there is another option to require a password so that device always locks with a password. And the device relocks after a certain period of inactivity. But again, this is just a file server, and all the file server capabilities are still there, and they are all working together with WorkFolders. So you can limit access or the amount of usage on a file server by using quotas. You can screen out certain file types. If you don't want a certain file type to be stored on your file server, you can run advanced reports if you want to see what's actually being stored and going on your file server. And maybe most interestingly, you can use the file classification infrastructure that we have shipped for a couple of releases. And that, in combination with RMS, the rights management service, whether you have it deployed on-prem or using the new RMS online capabilities, those two combined with each other have a very, very powerful story. And I actually have a good demo at the end of this session that I would like to show you and that I think makes clear why using this is a very good idea with WorkFolders. In short, what it does is it can automatically look through your files, and you can specify whether you're looking for social security numbers, credit card strings, any other type of information that is specific to your organization. And if FCI finds that information, it assigns a tag to the file. And then you can have RMS go in and look for that tag and say, oh, I found that tag, so I should use that template to encrypt the file. And that encryption will stay with the document no matter if it gets emailed or put on an SMB on a USB stick or traveling somehow to some people that may or may not have access to the document. So I think that's a very powerful story there. All right, let's look at a server deployment. Up here, I have my file server. And let's say we would like to enable, let's start here. Let's say we would like to enable work folders in the first place. You can go to the add roles wizard, and we can find file and storage services. We can open the sub roles. And down here on the server 2012 R2, you will find work folders. That's how you turn it on. It's already turned on this machine because I'm using it as a demo. But this is how you would turn it on. If you did turn it on the file and storage services, you would find a new canvas called work folders. And it shows you all the sync shares grouped by all the servers that you have in your environment and gives you a comprehensive overlook of all the sync activities. So if you select a sync share, you're actually being able to see all the users. Scrolling. So we have selected a sync share. It's the finance department where Joe works. We can see there are all these people in the finance department that are allowed to come in and sync with this folder. We can even look for Joe. And when we find Joe, we can right-click on Joe. We can see all the different devices that Joe is using to synchronize. We can see if there are any errors in those devices. So if a user comes in and tells you, I have some trouble on this device, this is a very good place to start for troubleshooting. And now, if we like to create a new sync share, it's actually a very simple task. Just go to Tasks, create new sync share. And the first thing that we're going to have to do is we have to decide, where would we like to create our sync share? Where is the actual data for it? Or where do we want the data to be stored? So one of the cool things about work folders is that you can enable an SMB share to point to the same direction, to the same location as a sync share. Or you can enable an NFS share to point to the same location as the sync share. So it really doesn't matter how many access protocols you use to share out the same data. So in this case, we made it easy. We already have an SMB share that the sales team uses for their individual data. So we can just choose the SMB share for the sales team here, or we could have created a new folder or pointed to an existing path we haven't shared before. And then we're going to be asked about the structure of the subfolders. Every subfolder under this location will get a special name, the name of the user. This name can, no, that's the wrong one. This name can either be just the user alias. So if we're looking at finance, we have those people that did come in and sync so far. So they just have their alias here. That's the folder name. If you choose to deploy users, or if you choose to have users come in from multiple different domains, you would like to include the domain information, so you choose the second one that looks similar to this. And in the end, you can also decide if there is a subdirectory that you would like to choose. I lost my window. If there is a subdirectory that you would like to choose for synchronization, like this user here, for instance, had desktop redirected, had favorites redirected, had my documents redirected. Maybe you only want to sync my documents. Maybe it doesn't make sense to have another copy of favorites on the device. So in this line down here, you can specify whether you would like to have only a subfolder under the user folder actually participating in work folder sync. In this case, we just stick with the default. We give the folder a name. Well, just keep it at sales. And now we're actually needing to add who has permissions to come in and sync. So beforehand, I created a dedicated security group that the sales team can come in and that the sales team can use to come in and sync. We apply that. And now I would like to direct your attention to this little check mark down here. Essentially means that none of the server admins can come in and look at the user data. But you know that server admins really are admins on the box, so they can give themselves permissions to look on the data if they really want. But this is a traceable action. So if they did that and you have a corporate policy that forbids them from, that prohibits them from doing that, you could go back in and say, oh, this person actually granted himself access to this. So it's something that they can't hide. So in this, I just keep the defaults. And here we're talking about the sync share policies that you can enforce. This is really what makes a sync share different from an SMB share. And those policies need some more explanation. The first one, meaning encrypt work folders, means we're using EFS, the new re-implementation of EFS, on the client that will automatically, with a corporate key, protect all the corporate data without affecting any of the personal data. And corporate data here means all the data inside their work folders that are actually stored on the individual device. And you can then come in with your MDM and wipe the corporate key, destroying access to that data. The second option that you have here is to set a policy for automatically locking the device after a certain period of inactivity, requiring a device password, and also basically have a retry count. How often can they try to put in their password before their account gets locked? We're using EAS, Exchange Active Sync policies for that. For those of you that are familiar with this, we're applying a very basic level of security here. Any policy that is more restrictive will automatically override our policy. So we're making sure that there is a base level of security on the client that you can feel secure or that you can feel good about, that the data that's syncing to these clients is kept, at least at a minimum level, secure. All right. After we review what we're about to create, we just set up the server, and we see the sales sync share. If we remove the filter, we can see that there are only two people, Tim and Sally, that are allowed to come in and sync. And furthermore, we can see that here is the volume that the actual data is actually hosted on. So if I would like to get some more information about that, I can pivot to the volumes canvas. Or I could go and set up a quota, because most of you would like to limit the amount of resources that each individual user is allowed to use on the file server. So by simply creating a quota template and assigning it through this wizard or through this configuration page allows you to very simply and very quickly set up a quota for each user to come in and sync. All right. So let's get back to the deck. So we talked about the client. We talked about the server. I hope you have seen that so far client and server are easy to set up, easy to maintain. There's nothing really complicated about that. And now let's take a little bit deeper look into how a file actually stays in sync. Let's talk more about sync itself. If you set up a partnership between a server and a client, a few infrastructure pieces are being provisioned for you. First, there's the data directory on the client. We've seen that. That was the location that the user could customize in the wizard, where the actual files will be stored and synchronized to. There is also a hidden version database. It's just a JET database. It's nothing that you have to manage. It's nothing that you need to be worried about. We're completely managing and obfuscating that from you, the IT admin, and the user. And thirdly, we have a download staging directory. And that staging directory is used to, when actually a new file or a change to a file comes in, the file is being downloaded into this directory. And only after the download is finished is then very quickly and atomically exchanged with the file in the data directory, so that there is virtually no overlap for the user. A similar set of infrastructure pieces is established on the server. Each sync share will have a data directory for the user to come in and sync. If it's not there, it will be created for the user. Instead of provisioning a new database, each time it's also a JET database, each time for the user, we will just go and provision a couple of tables in one database that will be governing the entire sync share. And there will be an upload staging directory used very much the same way. If a change is uploaded, it will be uploaded into the staging directory and then swapped out with the file in the user directory. And we provision the server with the correct rights to do this on behalf of the user. If somebody goes in and changes those permissions, we might have a sync failure, and we would raise that error for the user on their individual devices and let them know something is not syncing. So the user can reach out to you and say, well, I have a bunch of files that just stopped syncing. What's going on? So how does a file actually stay in sync? Let's say we create a file, a Word document, we write our text, we save it, we close Word, and we detect that there is a local change. We can do this on 8.1 with a very new capability, which lets us monitor our namespace, and then we get a notification, and with that notification, we can start up a sync session. So the client initiates a sync session with the server. Those two compare in their databases the little versions of the table. There's some more metadata about each version of the file that we store in these databases. Those databases really just help us make sync work in a way that we can address all the corner cases and all the important information that we need to have to make sure we don't ever lose data. So, client is uploading the data to the server into the upload staging directory. If that is finished, the server's responsibility then lies in actually applying that change to the user's data directory. One of the things that can happen in this step is there could be a conflict. I could have gone in via SMB, changed the file, and then I could have gone in via sync, could have changed the file on the local device, and now these two files come in. So what will happen? When that happens, we take the same approach most sync solutions take, and that is we will look at the latest write file. The latest write to a file wins. That's the winner file. We will write that file to the directory, and the loser file will be stored next to the winner file as a copy, and it will be appended the device name that the conflict came from and a number if there are multiple conflicts. So with that, we're completely decoupling conflict resolution from sync. If you remember back in offline files and photo redirection, if a conflict occurred, we were popping out of the blue a dialog for the user that said, which file do you like to keep? Keep both, keep just one, which one you want to keep? Really, users didn't like that. It very often came out of context. And in this release, or in this approach, we simply eliminate that dialogue and let the user come in at their convenience and say, oh, there's a conflict file. Maybe I want to merge content. Maybe I want to just delete the file. They can look at it at their own convenience. If, let's say, on the second client, no change is detected, there is going to be a timeout every 10 minutes. It's the default. The clients come in and check with the server, do you have something new for me? The server says, in this case, yes, I have something new. There's a new file that you should have. So the client downloads that file into the download staging directory and then applies the change. And as he applies the change, another conflict could have happened. So now this client is responsible to resolve the conflict in just the same way we've just seen this from the server. I want to let you walk away from this slide with three very important facts. Number one, we're limiting sync to one partnership per user per device. What that means is on a Windows device where you can log in with multiple users, each one of these users can have their own partnership, but they can have only one. We like you. We know you would like to do more. And this release limited to just one partnership per user per device. The client always drives sync. That means the server never reaches out to the clients. The clients always come and ask, do you have a change for me, or present a change to the server. And last but not least, the device that is responsible for applying a change is also responsible for conflict resolution. And we will always make sure that the device name that we append to a conflict file is not a server name or something that the user doesn't know. It will always be the name of a device that the user owns and knows and can recognize and put in context where that change came from. All right. We talked about the sync protocol being an alternative route to the same set of data that you could enable SMB access to as well. So the sync protocol is actually a complete new protocol. It's nothing to do with SMB. It's nothing to do with NFS. We've designed it in a way that we can handle today's and tomorrow's challenges with regards to sync and what we would like to do and basically create more functionality in the future. And we know that this protocol can handle it. It requires or insists on seeing a signed SSL certificate. So it will only connect over port 443. We will encrypt with this SSL certificate the data transport, as well as making sure that there is no malicious server that comes in as a man-in-the-middle attack and likes to get a copy of your files. So I think that's very important to see. You can decide to terminate SSL at the edge. If you like to do that, then the proxy server needs to have the SSL cert as well. And you can optionally route your internal clients to always go through the same proxy as well. Just set up DNS to route them through the proxy. And when you do that, you can do things like deep packet inspection. So it's a very good place for a server anti-malware gateway to sit on and basically watch that there is no malicious software or files being distributed to clients or to the server in the first place. And last but not least, I need to caution you, there is also what we documented before, there is a way for you to ignore HTTPS to set a registry key on the client that allows you to come in and just use HTTP. And I really like to warn you about not using that because you're exposing yourself. It's great for an evaluation environment where you know you're going to scrap the clients and they're not going to be used for anything else but this evaluation. But if you intend to use the clients for a production environment, you will lose that the data is encrypted in transport, and you're putting yourself at risk that somebody impersonating the work photo server will just come and grab your data. So don't do that. All right, backup and recovery. I think most of you know that when you have a line of business application, or really anything that has a backup, that has a database dependency, you're being presented with a couple of challenges. And there's actually two challenges for work folders here. One, that the database that holds all the metadata about files and their versions, and the data set, the actual files, that they stay in sync, that they're actually coherent at the time of the backup. The second challenge that you have with backup and restore is that on a restore, the database never goes back in time and thinks it knows after the restore, it knows the truth about the world. Because if that happens, you may lose files. We have sync problems if a database goes back in time, so we need to avoid that. Let me show you how. The simplest way of a restore is a single file restore. You can do that on the server, you can do that on the client. If you restore a single file or a bunch of files, we will see the write that you're trying to make. So we will take that and replace the file with the restored version. The restored version syncs to all the files, to all the devices. Nothing complicated about that. A little bit more complicated this scenario is when you're actually doing full client recovery. When you do full client recovery, we want to make sure that the database doesn't come back. We rather rebuild the database from scratch. So we've done what we need to do to exclude our database from backup, which is the do not backup reg key. And a well-behaved backup application should obey that. But we encourage you to test whether that is happening for you or not. And we have provided some information about how you can tell whether the database came back. And then if the client is restored, doesn't have a database yet, creates a new one. When it goes and syncs with the server, it will simply learn from the server which files do I need? It downloads them, it updates them, it maybe deletes a bunch of files that have been deleted since the last backup, and everything simply rolls forward in time for this client. Even more complicated, when you do a server recovery. We've done a VSS writer that gets invoked when you attempt to make a backup. If that backup attempt is made, our VSS writer makes sure that database and data set are coherent with each other. Then it will allow the backup to happen. And on restore, the VSS writer is called again, tweaking the database so that it doesn't look like a new database. The database doesn't think it knows the truth about the world. It only thinks that it's not quite up to date. It just looks like a database that needs more updates. And as the clients come in and sync with the server, they update their little portion of the namespace, and with that, the database. So there's nothing for you as an IT admin to manage. As the clients come in and sync with the server, they will teach the server what's the latest state of this data set. And everything, again, just rolls forward in time. And again, we encourage you to see that the VSS writer is engaged on backup and on and after restore. All right. I talked a lot about end-to-end security. And I would like to bring this together in one place where we all can see which emphasis we actually put on work folders and security in this release to make sure that as you bring in personal devices into the enterprise, you can feel secure about how the data is being handled. First of all, we're secure by default. That means we have the sync share permissions, just like SMB share permissions, and then NTFS permissions inside the folder that take over for fine granular control. We require SSL. Optional, on a sync share, you can enable a policy that says encrypt the data. You can use your MDM to wipe the encryption keys, so you can do a selective wipe from devices that maybe the user lost. And you can set a policy that requires the device to have a password and locks automatically after a certain period. And last but not least, we have a little bit of an ecosystem of Microsoft and non-Microsoft products that allow you to further extend that feature, further improves on security. With ADFS, you can limit it. You can limit to registered devices. With file classification and RMS, you can essentially make sure that a file is protected and that this protection and encryption is traveling with the file. Of course, you can use the server as an anti-malware gateway. We're just talking about that when you terminate SSL at the edge. And there is a company called RSA. They extend the file classification infrastructure. So if you have specific needs that you can't find in the file server as it ships today, maybe take a look at them. They're probably addressing your specific needs. All right. Now I would like to show you a demo about how we can actually classify those files with FCI and automatically RMS protect them so that this protection stays with the file. We're again at our file server. What I have here is the tools menu. I go to the file server resource manager, and I see file classification. So I created a file classification rule that says if I find the string confidential in a document, I would like to apply a tag to the document that says impact high. It's basically you're defining that if a document contains confidential, you've just identified that this is a high business impact document. As you create this rule, you can create a file management task, also going to the same location that you store the exact data. And you can say, if I see an impact property that has a value high, I would like to go and apply the high impact data RMS template to this file. And that's essentially what we're doing here. So let's see that in action. Let's say I'm here on my work PC, and over here I have my Surface PC. And here is a Word document where I actually have something confidential. That's the important word in here. And I will just close that. And all I'm doing is I'm dropping that into my work folders. So observe the size. Right now, this size is 618 kilobytes. What happens is this file is now synchronized with the server. In a couple of seconds, we're going to see this file appearing here. Size is still 618 kilobytes. What's now happening on the server is the file classification infrastructure goes through the file, finds the word confidential, assigns the tag, and the next step is that the RMS template is applied. After that happened, this change from the server would have synced down to the client, and we can now see that the size is slightly bigger because we put encryption on it. As we open the file now, we can actually see that it is RMS protected. It asks me for my credentials. And now the rights management service is being consulted, the credentials check out, and I have actually an RMS encrypted document. The powerful story here is that as users create content, you don't have to go in and try to find the files, or you don't have to ask the users to specify which files are high business impact or which files need to be specially protected. You have the power as an IT admin to go and create the rules based on which you think files need to be protected, and you can refine that over time. And then automatically, file classification kicks in, finds the documents, and applies the right RMS templates for you. And this is all ongoing as the user uses the system. I think that's a very powerful story for you as an IT admin to make sure that sensitive data stays properly protected, no matter where the file is traveling. All right. So, multi-server deployments. There may be multiple reasons why you would like to deploy more than one workfolder server. Sometimes for scale out and capacity because you have a large enterprise. Sometimes you have branch offices, you want to keep the latency for sync low. You can have a departmentalized IT where every department has their own file servers. Or just for compliance, you need to separate data in different data stores. So the challenges we need to solve here are pretty similar. Essentially, we need to find the right server for the user. So we need to make sure that the entire configuration for the user is very simple and remains very simple. And we make it easy for you as the IT admin to move users from one server to another, because that will happen. So how do we find the right server for you? Joe started the configuration and provided his email address. What we're essentially doing is we're going to workfolders.contoso.com, workfolders.thedomain that he entered, and we reach the DNS of your organization. In this case, I have round robin DNS. I put in sync 1 and sync 2 as the two servers that can handle auto discovery. I could provide all three of them or just one of them. Discovery is something that every sync server simply does. There is no role, no setting you need to do. You can see that every sync server is capable of doing this. So sync 1 is returned to the server, to the user, and the client comes in through the reverse proxy and is now checking in with sync 1. If sync 1 is actually the server that the user likes or can sync with, there is a sync share for the user with the right security permissions, then that would be all the user needed to do. But that would be a very simple example. Let's go with a more complicated example. Let's say sync 1 isn't the server that the user likes to sync with. Then we provide a schema extension. It's a very lightweight schema extension. It doesn't require you to update AD. You simply extend your AD schema. And in that schema extension, you can provide the sync server for each individual user. So sync 1 will confer with Active Directory, will retrieve sync 3 is actually the server that the user likes to sync with, returns sync 3 to Joe, and from then on, sync 3 is the URL that will be stored in Joe's configuration, and Joe will always go directly to sync 3 to start syncing, until he loses permission to this sync 3 server, and then auto discovery will simply kick back in. We're going to get there in the next slide when we talk a little bit more about migrations. By the way, the alternative, if you don't like to use this schema extension, is really to hand out individual or hand out URLs to the user. And they may or may not have that handy when they want to set up their personal devices. So it's really not a very nice user experience if you can't make that work. All right. Let's start off with something that you're probably more familiar with deployment of home folders or folder redirection. And in the end, we made sure that you have full server-side support for both work folders and folder redirection, for instance. We don't advise you that you create folder redirection and work folders on the same client at the same time. The reason for this is there's a very hard user education problem to overcome. Because if you redirect, for instance, my documents and you're also syncing my documents, then the user will go to his PC, will check in, will see, oh, there is my files and my documents, and there is my files in the work folders document, in the work folders directory. He might think one is redundant. To save some space on his client, he deletes one. We all know that this is going to the same place on the server. So as he does the delete syncs back to the client, and all his files are gone. So we really don't recommend you setting this up at the same time. But there is an opportunity in that as well. I'm going to talk about that in a second. All right. What if you want to migrate from one server, one work folder server, to another? If you're confident that all the data that you have on server A might be a 2008 R2 server, and you want to migrate to use work folders to a 2012 R2 server, then you can do a server-side copy. You can just stage the folders and files for the user on the 2012 server, disable folder redirection, enable work folders, and the user can use his files. But here's an opportunity for you. What we see most people are doing when they get a work PC is somewhere in my documents they're going to create a folder for private data, their private files. I'll certainly do that. A lot of people I know do that. So often you end up redirecting a folder with personal and work files commingled in each other. There are many reasons why you as an IT admin probably doesn't or won't like to have any of the user's personal files. So the opportunity here is to set up work folders on a brand new server, no content. So what the user will get is an empty work folders directory, and he still has all the work files and all the personal files commingled in his My Documents folder. And then you simply ask him to move locally on the client, just move the work data from My Documents into work folders. And the incentive is that he can then use this as sync on all his other devices. And as you do that, you're left with personal data in My Documents and with work data in work folders. It's a very clear differentiation. And then you can turn off folder redirection on My Documents, and what you're left with is just the work data in work folders that's now happily syncing. And the user did the migration from 2008 R2 to 2012 R2 for you, and you even filtered the data in a way that is more appropriate. All right. What if you like to use, if you like to move a user from one work folder server to another? You've seen the little attribute in the schema extension. The first step, how you would do that, is to basically go and change that to the new sync server. At this stage, you only prepared Active Directory for the change. For the user, nothing changes. He's still going to the old server in sync. When you then are ready to affect the change, you're going and removing the user from the old security group and putting it into the security group of the server where you would like to have him sync now. As you do that, the user comes in to server 3, for instance, in our example, likes to sync. The server says, I don't have anything for you. You're not permitted to sync to me. Auto-discovery kicks in. We find the right server for the user, and he's automatically syncing with this new server. This happens so quickly that for the user, there is no actual change detectable. So this is something how you can very effectively and very easily affect a migration from one workflow server to another. All right, as we end this session, I would like to remind you about some key takeaways. I hope that in the demos and in the content that I've provided, you can see that Workfolders is very simple and very easy to deploy for the user as well as for you as an IT admin, that it has a pretty good feature set, allows you to address some of the common problems that you're going to get with bring your own devices, that you can fully leverage any of your existing investments in file servers, that you can empower your employees to be productive, basically to do the things that they want, but remaining in compliance with your data governance policies because you can effectively enforce them on the user's devices. And last but not least, you can gain a good deal of insight into what the user stores on the file server, how that data is protected, et cetera, et cetera. With that, I'm open for questions now. Thank you very much.